Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and I know some of you may be experts in one kind of a plant. Maybe you're an expert in rose or daylilies, or you may have a little bit of everything in your garden, maybe a lawn as well, probably a lawn as well. And I tell you what, there are always things we don't know about those plants and that lawn. And that's kind of where UW Extension horticulture educators come into play here in our state. They answer lots of questions, practically anything you can imagine, and they always do it with a smile. And we have a big smiler here today in the studio with me. She's got a great smile on her face. Patty Nagai, here to help you. She is a extension horticulture educator for Racine County. Lots of great information to share, and I hope you'll join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question there. If you got a cool garden picture, flowers or veggies, love to see that too. Put it up on my Facebook page, and we'll talk about it. And Patty, always great to have you on Garden Talk.
Well, thanks. It's always great to be here.
Love to have you here. Are you getting lots of questions these days, or are things winding down?
Oh, no, we're always getting a lot of questions. And this time of year, and especially after the summer that we've had, and the, you know, some
drought.
You know, it's a combination of things. We've seen a lot of damage to people's shrubs and trees and lawns. And even in the vegetable garden and perennial gardens, you know, the drought and the heat in at least our part of the state were really severe. But then we also, you know, have people who were able to water and are seeing this tremendous lush growth. So for the last couple of days, I've been out with some of the community gardens looking at jungles of tomatoes.
Yeah.
You know, and I think partly gardeners would like winter to come now.
You're getting tired of the
make it all go away.
But, I understand what you mean. I know a county like Dane, I think it's Dane County is 9 inches.
Right.
I believe it's 9 inches below.
And that's
rainfall.
True for most of the southeast.
Yeah, and the north
counties.
Is some pretty
north,
good.
North, they had a good amount of rain this year.
So it varies. Depends on where you are. And so you've had lots of drought-related questions.
Lots of drought-related questions. And, you know, it was also a good year for a lot of tree diseases and fungal spots and powdery mildew and downy mildew and... not that I'm trying to encourage those disease kinds of questions, because I'm not Brian Huddleston by any stretch of the imagination. But we do get a lot of those disease questions, you know, people wanting to know, you know, my tree just doesn't look very good this year. Should I have done something? Do I need to think about doing something for next year? Is it going to be okay? Or they want to spray something right now, which is... You know, really not a good time of year.
Not a good time. If you're going to spray anything, you got to spray some H2O on those tree
roots. Right, water, yes.
Water.
Water is a great thing. And that's, you know, that's a chemical too, but it's
And water
safe.
On trees, probably right up till frost. They
exactly.
really need it. They
exactly.
really need it.
You know,
it.
In these areas where we've had such a deficit in water, it would be really hard to overwater trees and shrubs right now. They need a lot of water going into winter.
You know, Fred in Watersmeet, Michigan has a question for you. Let's see what's on his mind. Hi, Fred. Thank you for calling.
Hi, guys. Thanks a lot. I have a lake cottage, and I have a couple perennial beds.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, we've had lows in the low 30s, but nothing seems to die off. So my anise plant is still blooming, my black-eyed Susans, my daylilies. And what I was wondering, and we're in the process of closing the cabin for the year, and what I was thinking about doing is it safe to, like, use head shears and shear off everything, like my peonies, and then run my lawnmower in there? Would I be harming them for next year's growth, or, you know, or are you supposed to wait till everything completely browns up?
Wouldn't you want to wait until he dies
off? That would be ideal. How far north is your cottage, though? I mean, you're talking about some pretty low temperatures.
I'm between Watersmeet and Marinesco, and you.
Yeah, you're up there.
So that's
up
pretty
there,
far
UP.
North. You know, we're looking at the beginning of October, and so for many of the perennials, especially in those upper latitudes, you know, they are still in the process of putting a lot of storage reserves down into their roots. However, we are really close to that hard freeze, too late for them to put anything more in their roots. So,
yeah, that's true.
You know, ideally, and as gardeners, we have to make these tough decisions all the time, but ideally, it would be best to let that stuff stand all winter. You know, a lot of those plants provide food for birds or habitat for other wildlife. But we know that if you do that, it'll be a big mess for you to clean up next spring when you come back. So waiting until they're completely brown would be the best time to cut them back. But if you're ready to do it now and you're not going to have another opportunity this fall, I would say go ahead and do it. It's not going to hurt them. But you will miss, you would, if it were in your yard, I would say you're going to miss out on that fall and winter interest, and the birds and the other wildlife are going to miss out on some potential food and habitat. But if you're not going to be there and this is the only time that you have to do it, it's not going to hurt them.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yep, thanks.
And I might have put a little bit of guilt in there for you, but I apologize for that, but I can't help myself.
You couldn't help yourself, could you?
I was serious. It is a tough decision. Yeah. I do this in my own yard, you know, because I know that there are certain plants that would really be great to leave them standing over the winter. But honestly, as soon as we get the first big snowfall, they look horrible, and then they flatten out, and then I have to go clean up a big mess in the spring. And it's harder to do that in the spring than it is in the fall for some reason.
Yeah, I know. But I still leave it up anyway.
Yeah, well, certain areas I do leave up, and other areas I mow it down. But the lawnmower, you know, I know a lot of people go in and use the lawnmower on the raspberry patch in the fall and cut their raspberries down with the lawnmower. And some perennials, you know, cut them down to the ground. Hostas, you could cut those back.
Bitty time.
Yeah, they'll be fine.
Rafik in Cedarburg, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, I discovered an Ohio buckeye tree in my backyard. I am one of those guys who doesn't want to cut anything down because of the reason which the lady mentioned. I know I can identify trees, but its leaves started to get yellow peripherally, and then from the apex, and then went onto down a little bit. I've looked at any bugs, anything else, and they're not there. I think this has been a diseased tree for two or three more years. I try to clean it up around it, but it simply keeps browning up, and I don't know what to do with it. And second question about Ohio buckeye, can I grow an Ohio buckeye tree from the seed?
Of course you can grow one from the seed. I you know, that's what those seeds are for. But I don't know what the dormancy breaking requirements are for the Ohio buckeye. A lot of those trees that make nuts, hard nuts like that, the best thing to do is, if you really want to grow one, is to pot it up in some damp potting mix and put it in your garage or a really cold place, or you can sink it into the ground, or you can just leave it outside and you know, put some leaves or mulch around it. But remember where you put it, because the normal process for those types of seeds to germinate is to go through a winter. And so it's not going to do that in your house. And if you collect the seeds and bring them inside and put them in a nice, dry, cool area, it's not going to get what it needs to break dormancy. So, and I'm not sure with Ohio buckeye what the specifics are, but my guess would be it's going to require freeze-thaw and that whole stratification process where you have to have,
almost,
you know, alternating
sure.
temperature and a little bit of moisture to really break down that dormancy. So gather up a whole bunch of those buckeyes, put them into a moist potting mix, and leave it somewhere where it will be exposed to the natural fluctuating temperatures, and you'll probably get a good amount of germination, I would guess.
Yep.
And if that doesn't work, call back, and I will have looked it up and figured out exactly how to germinate it.
That
Ohio
sounds
buckeye.
Like a pretty good guess to me.
Yeah.
What about my other question? The one
right, the disease question. You know, if this is something that has been going on for years, I would say to look at the trunk and the branches really carefully. Make sure that you don't have a canker or a fungal kind of disease, something oozing out of the bark or little holes that might indicate a borer of some kind. Other than that, you know, you would probably need to bring pictures and a sample into your local extension office and see if they can kind of figure it out. Right now, we're getting into fall color on a lot of these trees anyway, so it might be a little confusing because you're going to have color changes that are naturally occurring right now. So, you know, they still, if it's a fungal disease, they would still be able to culture it out. But if there's something else going on, you know, it's a total tree awareness kind of a process to try and figure out something like that. But it can be done. It's hard to do over the radio without a sample.
Good luck, Rafiq. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Patty Nagai, our guest, UW Extension horticulture educator for Racine County. And Mike and Eau Claire, you are next. Hi, Mike.
Yes, good morning, guys. How are you?
Great. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Excuse me, I took you off speakerphone. I was listening as I was outside here working. Well, it's a beautiful day up here.
No.
Two things. I have bought some arborvitae, small ones, foot to foot and a half high.
Mm-hmm.
I have to move everything in the spring because of a corner on the street here.
Okay.
And I've got them in pretty good sized buckets, a foot deep by, oh, let's say a cubic foot, 12 by 12 by 12.
Okay.
Can I leave them for the winter, or are they going to get killed, as they say, by the weather? Do I have to put them underground? I'm trying to avoid where I'm going to put them and everything is going to depend on when this project is done.
Right. Yeah, this is a problem that occurs frequently with people who either are having some construction done or they're moving and they want to take some plant materials with them. You know, there are lots of reasons. And then a lot of times people will actually purchase material in the fall. They'll purchase these beautiful plants in the fall because they're on sale.
They're really cheap.
Exactly.
As a matter of fact, they really are cheap.
Yeah, it's a great time.
They cost me $1.19 a piece. I mean, you know.
Oh, well, you have a lot invested in these.
And how big are they?
I don't want to lose them. I'm a big bird feeder, and arborvitae is
They're a great little house for a lot of the birds, so that's a beautiful thing. And it's wonderful to go visit nurseries and purchase these plants and ideally, of course, get them in the ground right away. This is a great time to plant. But I understand you can't do that right now. So what you have to think about is protecting the root systems. So you can either sink the pots in the ground, which is a lot of work because you're talking about a pretty good size pot. You could put the pots up against a side of your house that is protected from the winter wind. Not necessarily like the southwest side of your house where you're going to get a lot of really hot summer sun. In some cases, it's better to put them on the north or the east side of the house where they don't get that really severe winter sun either. But you want to protect it from the extreme winds. So put them up against the house, and then you can either construct a chicken wire cage around them or you can just pile straw around them. Straw, leaves, chipped leaves, all great insulators. If you've in the process of what they're doing in your front yard, if you've got a little pile of soil that you could move and actually shovel around the pots, that would be even better. But what your goal is to protect the pots. And you're not trying to keep them from freezing. What you're trying to do is insulate them so they don't fluctuate in temperatures so much over the winter. So when they freeze, they stay frozen.
I've got a wood built, like a garage built shed with a big window in it.
Mm-hmm.
Could I store them in there?
Possibly.
Do they need light during the winter?
They do need light. Evergreens don't truly go dormant, so sunlight, and they need to be moist. So if you put them inside, it may be that you're going to have to water them until the soil freezes.
Yeah.
And it may not freeze in that shed.
And I've got like 40 bags of pine needles. I mean, I could bury these things if I wanted to. So
well, just put them around.
Pine trees.
Yeah, so just use the pine needles for mulch. You don't actually have to even take them out of the bags if you can get them packed around the pots really well. The shed is a possibility as long as you don't let them go dry. But I'll tell you that arborvitae is one of those amazing, resilient plants that in many cases actually can overwinter in an outdoor container like that. But I would hate to risk your $1.19 investment, so let's try and mulch them and keep those roots protected.
You know what? I've done this with arborvitae. I've had really good luck overwintering them. I usually put a board under, set the pots on a board on wood.
Okay.
Because that, it's a little more...
from the frost?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've had good luck, but man, I've just packed those needles around and water it. Make sure it's good and watered going into the winter.
Right, you don't want it to dry out.
No.
That will be the death of
watering.
It.
Yeah, you want to water right up to the end. Yeah. Give it a shot. Good luck, Mike. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah. Patty DeGuy, our guest today, UW Extension horticulture educator. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, who does a wonderful job producing these shows and answering the phones and talking with you when you call in. And you can do that right now at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Patty DeGuy today, UW Extension horticulture educator for Racine County, and visiting with her about all kinds of things going on in the fall garden, vegetable gardener, the flower garden. We're taking a look at trees and shrubs and, I guess, a little on the lawn. You can join in, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. Debbie emailed us a photo of a strawberry tower. So that was on email. She's wondering how she can overwinter it. And it's one of those towers, you know, where they grow the out of the side of the plant, of the pipe.
I see it. That's a really cool vertical gardening device. I like that.
Is there any way to overwinter it?
No.
I don't know how you're going to do that.
It is. That's going to be a little bit challenging. The only thing I would suggest is if it can be laid down and then cover the whole thing with straw.
Kind of like we do with roses sometimes.
Yeah.
Climbers.
And you know where I get my straw from, Larry?
Where?
Halloween. A lot of people in my neighborhood decorate with straw bales.
Oh, yeah.
And then they put it out on the road for the trash to pick up.
Oh, and you run around grabbing it.
So
I don't blame you.
I just go get my little wheelbarrow when I want. Go around and pick up my straw, and then I can use it to mulch things. That's the only thing I can think of that would work without really, you know, damaging the plants. You've got to get the pipe mulched or covered in some way, just like with the arborvita. If you try to bring it inside, it's either going to be too warm and the plants are going to push, and you're going to end up forcing the plants into a growth pattern that's not healthy for them, or you're going to... you know, it's going to dry out and they're going to die. So I think laying it down, if you could, you know, had a shallow trench that you could just put the whole thing down in, cover the whole thing with mulch. Yeah. It's possible. Good luck. Let us know.
Yeah, I really want to.
Because I like that
really
a lot.
Know. Yeah, it's cool. Dennis and Baldwin, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, we've got a flower garden in the front, about 20 feet in diameter, but the daylilies have kind of overgrown it.
Mm-hmm. They do that.
And we're putting up a new building. What would be the best time to thin them out and transplant them? Do they work pretty much like irises?
Yes, you can do it right now. Right now is a beautiful time to dig and divide daylilies and iris and, you know, cut the foliage all the way back, you know, dig them, divide them, put them in a nice happy place and water them, put a little mulch on them, and they will be ready to go and take over the next area that you plant them in. Next year, they'll be beautiful.
And you thin them pretty much like irises then?
Well, you know, daylilies are a little different from iris. Iris, you have to be very careful not to plant them too deeply. You want those rhizomes right at the soil level. With daylilies, you need to look at where the crown of the plant is and make sure that that is right at soil level or a little bit below. So, you know, their structure is a little bit different, but as far as digging and dividing, it's pretty similar. The daylilies, you know, they're pretty tough, and to cut them apart, you may need a machete or a big knife. A serrated knife works kind of well to get them separated out. It's easier if you cut the foliage back and then dig and divide them. Some people just use a sharp-edged shovel to run down the middle of the clump when you're actually digging them, and they divide them that way. Some people dig them up and then use a machete or some other sharp, dangerous tool to cut them into smaller pieces.
How much do you need left of each one?
Well, technically, you only need one little shoot, but what I generally do in dividing daylilies is I leave a clump. I try to make a clump that's probably about 2 inches apart, you know, 2 inches in diameter, so it has multiple shoots coming up. And by making a slightly larger clump, they will look nicer the first year that they come back up.
So maybe baseball size?
Yeah, baseball size would be. That'd be a good estimate.
Yeah. Okay.
And if you have to do the sports analogy for gardening, that's good.
Yeah. Will they grow right on the east side or west side of a building?
They will grow on the east side of the building, but daylilies will always flower better if they're in full sun. And typically east side, you know, they don't get, it depends on how close they are to the building and how tall the building is and all of that. But if they're right up against the building, you might not get as nice of a plant form or as many flowers as you would if they were somewhere where they're getting a little bit more full sun during the day. So east side, you know, if it's right up against the building, you might only get 5 to 6 hours a day. And somewhere else in your yard, you might get, you know, 7 or 8 hours a day. And that can make a big difference with flowering plants.
Yeah. Good luck, Dennis. Thanks a lot for calling. And Dave in Lansing, Iowa, what's on your mind?
Hey, good morning. Just a quick answer to the gentleman about planting chestnuts. I've had planted hundreds and have had great success. Step them into the ground about an inch or so underneath the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Mark it with a field marker flag. Come back the next spring and put a tube around it. Otherwise,
something will eat it.
Up, the deer will predate the heck out of it. Yeah.
Right, yep. Right. And chestnuts would be, buckeye and chestnut would, yeah, be very similar. So
yeah. Yep.
Thanks, yeah. Dave.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, and the protecting from predators, you know, is always a good thing. Those deer in the spring, any nice little tender shoots that are coming up, that's wonderful food.
They're soon gone. And Joel is driving through from California. Hi, Joel.
Howdy. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Sure. I just had a few comments about the Ohio buckeye because yeah, I'm from Wisconsin, but have lived in California quite a while, have some land there, but also a farm and woods and around Stevens Point. Anyway, on our land in California, we found some Ohio buckeyes, and I, you know, just recognized the big nut, and they're really beautiful, but when looking online and reading several different sources, the nut itself is toxic to humans and animals.
Right.
And worse than that, the flowers are actually toxic to honeybees. So I don't see any benefit to having them around anything that I want to actually have pollinated.
Right.
There's definitely better plants to have. I don't understand why it's a state flower of Ohio. I guess nobody really thought that through very well, other than they're beautiful.
They are beautiful, but you're right. The nuts are poisonous. I had not heard that about the flowers.
I hadn't either.
With the honeybees, so that's something I will look into. But, you know, we have many, many ornamental plants, naturally occurring native plants that are poisonous. That's not that uncommon. You know, in the plant kingdom, there are, you know, such a wide array and diversity in plants.
Oh, yeah.
But the Ohio buckeye is a beautiful plant. It is a beautiful tree, and a lot of people enjoy having that beauty in their yard. And there's cultivars of buckeye, of course, and the bottle brush buckeye is also a really pretty plant. But, you know, a lot of nuts and berries are poisonous, so...
Sure, but it just disturbs me the most, I think, that the flowers are actually...
Yes, and that's something I will look into. I think that's a good question for our Phil Pelletarian. Yeah.
Yeah, I have not seen that.
Hmm. And you Thank
you. Yeah, thanks.
Sorry, I'm driving and I'm losing you.
All right, thanks, Joel. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Enjoy your stay here in Wisconsin. Appreciate it very much. I guess he said he had a farm here, too. So
right. He's got land here. And
he's a land baron. He's from Wisconsin and
he's,
California.
And he's driving between California and Wisconsin all the time. That's a long way.
Yeah. Well, I wonder. Here's Christine in Kenosha County. I bet she's with us. Hi, Christine.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have a quick question. I had recently discovered that... I have a pine Sawyer beetle infestation in one of my trees.
Okay.
I have a very small piece of land. I live out in the county. But I have about 25 evergreen trees of all sorts, cedar, blue, spruce, et cetera. And every tree is really important to me because it's such a small piece of land. And they were all planted when I bought the property 14 years ago. So I'm kind of concerned about it, and I don't know if I should think the sky is falling at this point or what. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say pine sawyer beetle is one of those that shows up every now and then in our extension office. And it is kind of an opportunistic beetle from what I remember, that it goes into trees that already have kind of a health problem. So, you know, it's a good thing to look for. And as far as controlling it, I would refer you back to the extension office and have... Did you have this identified through the extension office, or did you have an arborist come out to look at your trees?
No, actually, I found it because a pine sawyer beetle actually flew into my house when the window was open.
Nice.
Hit my head, and it was so frightening to me. I was so taken back by the size of the beetle.
And yeah, they're really impressive.
I know, and they have the big pincers on the front. I caught it, even though I was horrified, and I identified it on the internet.
Okay.
And I actually had put it in the freezer, and it's still there today.
Oh, excellent. You could take it into the extension office and get some additional literature on it. But what I would recommend is, you know, it's always a good idea to be very aware of the health of your trees. And there are a lot of different insects and diseases that can affect your trees. So, but a lot of them won't bother your trees unless your trees are already in trouble. So, you know, you need to make sure that your trees are, you know, well taken care of, that they're planted in the appropriate site, that they're not too close together. You know, that if they do need some corrective pruning, that is done. That can go a long ways in protecting your trees and making sure that they live a very long time. If you are, you know, if you're at the point where you're ready to have an arborist come in, our extension office can provide you with a list of certified arborists in your area that can come to your property and do a more thorough inspection to make sure that there's nothing going on. There are a lot of insects out there that will do some damage to trees. Not all of them are fatal. And like I said, a lot of them don't come in unless the tree is already in trouble. And so it could be an indication that one of your pine trees is not doing well for another reason. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be that it has a root rot, or it could have a canker, or maybe it has one of the needle blight diseases. So, you know, there are a lot of things to consider. The extension office can help you to a certain extent. You have a really excellent extension office in Kenosha, and you've got a wonderful horticulture educator there, Barb Larson, as well as plant health advisors. And you could take pictures and bring samples in and bring your frozen bug, and they would be happy, you know, to give you some really detailed advice on next steps and what you should do to take care of that. But, you know, I can't recommend that you treat all your trees for beetles and bugs, because that would not be a healthy choice, actually.
No.
You need to know exactly which trees are affected and whether or not it is a serious infestation.
Barb will help you out. She comes on the show every so often.
She does. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great. Good luck, Christine. Thank you so much.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And we have a Facebook question from Dan. How far back should I cut daylilies once they're ready to be trimmed down for the winter?
To the ground.
Yeah, cut them right down to the ground.
Yeah.
And another Facebook question from Jackie in Maple, Wisconsin. I have 5 small blueberry plants. I wonder what small means. If I place those white foam rosebush insulator combs over them, will that be good winter protection?
I do not recommend that.
I wouldn't do it.
You know, blueberries are pretty hardy. The problem with blueberries in my part of the state is that our soil is not the best for blueberries. Jackson is not that much farther north, so I'm assuming she's done all of her soil testing and she knows that she's got the perfect high organic matter, low pH soil that's required for blueberries. If that is the case, the only thing she needs to do for winter protection is make sure those blueberries are well watered and they're mulched. And if she's really worried about it, if they're really newly planted, once the ground freezes, she can come in and do a winter mulch around the plants. Yeah. We don't recommend a heavy mulch prior to the ground freezing, because if you do that, all you're doing is inviting lovely little voles and other critters to come in and make their winter home there. And then not only do they have a nice, warm, moist place to live, they've got food and they will devour those blueberry plants. The rose cones aren't a great idea because they get way too hot and they don't have any air circulation in there. And that's probably would be a surefire way to kill the blueberries.
And a Facebook question from Inga. What's the best way to keep 5 catalpa tree seedlings over winter? They're in small pots right now. They're really small. Keep them inside?
No, I would bury them. I would sink the pots and do the winter mulch thing.
Yeah, actually, and if they're small, it'd be pretty easy.
Yeah, it wouldn't be too hard to do it. If they're really big pots, you could do what I recommended earlier with the arborvitae and put them up against a wall and mulch. But if they're really small, she probably needs to be using some kind of hardware cloth around them to keep, once again, critters from chewing on them. And, you know, that's true for a lot of people in different areas around the state. If you've got some tasty shrubs or newly planted trees or things that you want to protect from wildlife over the winter, hardware cloth, making a collar of hardware cloth at least 2 feet tall, if rabbit is the issue. If it's deer, then, I don't know, 6 feet. Just cage in your entire tree.
Oh, man. So we're thinking back to a caller who had a... 100-yard driveway and had plants on shrubs on both sides all the way up the drive.
Mm-hmm.
They all went in one winter. They got rabbits, got them, and
deer probably.
And deer
too.
And whatever.
Yeah. Yes. I love to see those deer pruned arborvitae. They're very, very
they love
attractive.
Arborvitae.
Yes, they do.
They love arborvitae.
That's nice winter food for them.
Bob and Eau Claire. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
We live in a little bit south of Eau Claire in a very sandy area. We've got several hydrangea bushes, we've got one that kind of faces the northwest. It's on the northwest corner of our garage house, and it is luxuriant in foliage. I mean, it has gotten huge. It's well watered, and so we've just got this magnificent foliage and not a single flower.
I knew that was coming.
I knew that was coming, too. Yeah.
Has it bloomed in previous years?
It has.
Okay.
Nothing.
It's
nothing
just taking a break.
Yeah, right. But yeah, we have had blooms. It did have one small, mediocre-looking, sickly-looking bloom. But other than that, it's not doing much.
What do you know what variety it is?
I wouldn't know. My wife might know, but she's not here, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and how many years have you had it in the ground?
It's probably been in that particular spot 3 to 4 years.
Okay. You know, hydrangeas, I find, are kind of particular about things. And this year, I have several of them, and I have them planted in different places around my home. But I do also have one on the northwest side of my house, and it's a blushing bride, which is the pink equivalent, or the kind of mauvey colored equivalent to endless summer. So it's a large-leaved hydrangea that's supposed to bloom on new wood, which is perfect for Wisconsin, because then you don't have to worry about the buds dying back over the winter, because the buds are newly formed in the spring. But this year it didn't. I have like three puny little flowers on it.
Yeah.
So I don't really have an explanation for it, because it's always bloomed beautifully in the past. The hydrangea in the back of my house, in the deep shade under my crabapple tree, had beautiful blooms on it this year. So, I think in some respects, you know, there could be some environmental condition that is affecting it. You know, we always say, if there's not enough sun, or if it's too wet, or if it's too dry, or, you know, perhaps we had a late frost or something that might have affected the growth. I mean, there are a lot of different things. Too much nitrogen in the soil, too much fertilizer, all of these things can inhibit flowering. But when it really comes down to issues like this, a lot of times we don't really know what factor it was that affected it. If you pruned your shrub in the middle of summer, then I would say you cut all the flower buds off. But I don't think you did that, did you?
No, we didn't. And would endless summer have large leaves?
Yes. Yes, endless summer.
It may be endless summer.
Yeah, and that's a pretty popular, that's been a really popular plant for the last 5 years or so, because it does bloom on new wood, and it has spectacular flowers when it works. When it works. But, you know,
some trouble with endless summer.
Well, a lot of these newer hydrangeas, they are just very particular. And I don't honestly know why they're blooming and why they're not. But the one in the back didn't bloom for 3 years. And it's a similar type of plant. It's called Forever and Ever White. But it's a similar kind of plant. It's a large-leafed, supposedly blooming on new wood hydrangea, and it didn't bloom. And I said, okay, I'm ripping that thing out. This is its last year. And then, of course, it bloomed beautifully. So I would say go out to the side of your house and talk to your shrub and say, you do not bloom,
you are out of here.
You are out of here. And I think that will work.
One more chance.
Yep. One more chance, Bob. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Fatty Nagai is a UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Racine County, and she is here to answer your questions on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller with my guest, Patty Nagai. Lots of callers online and Facebook questions and email questions. There's a Facebook photo from Hiram who it's a picture of either a gourd or squash. It grew on a pumpkin-like plant that I didn't purposely plant, the size of an acorn squash. Is it a gourd or a squash?
Or something in between. It does look like a squash, and my guess is that it would be edible, but my second guess would be that it's probably not ripe. The stem looks way too green and way too firmly attached. And, you know, with those type of pumpkin or winter squash plants, for them to be fully ripe, the skin needs to be very, very hard.
Yeah.
And typically you'll start to see some separation of the stem from the fruit. And then often you'll have a different coloration on one type of the fruit. Now, I'm only seeing one side of the fruit, so it could be that the other side is nice and yellow. But you'll see some of those changes take place. The only way to know for sure is to cut it open. Look at the flesh. My guess is that that's going to be an orange-fleshed squash. That's a guess. It's an educated guess, but it's a guess nonetheless. If it's fully ripe, you'll see fully formed seeds, and the seeds will be hard. Much like you would see with a pumpkin, and the vascular tissue that are kind of around the seeds will be very dry and thready. And then I would say, taste it.
See what happens.
If it tastes good, cook it and eat it. That's my recommendation.
If you taste it and you break out in a big rash, I probably wouldn't eat it.
Well, no, we don't want that.
No, probably very unlikely to happen.
Yeah, but I've noticed, you know, we've had this discussion at our community gardens and our master gardener meetings the last couple of weeks that people have been harvesting pumpkins and winter squash and other types of squash and then bringing them home and finding out that they're not really ripe.
Yeah.
And squash is not something that will continue to ripen once it's off the vine. Once it's off the vine, it's done. It's not doing anything else. So, you know, you're going to either cut it open and find out that it tastes delicious, or you're going to cut it open and find out it has no flavor whatsoever. And so you can cook it and add lots of butter and brown sugar, but then it's just going to taste like butter and brown sugar. It won't really taste like anything. So,
well,
good luck. Good luck with your squashy, gourdy pumpkin.
Paul in Watertown, what's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Every year when I dig up my cannas and my dahlias and my elephant ears, and then I put them in a bag or a box in the spring, they're either rotted or dried out.
Yeah.
How do I do this? When do I pull them? Do I cut the tops off of them? Do I let them dry out? What can I do?
Oh, it's such a delicate process for some people, and yet other people just dig the things up and throw them in their basement and don't do anything, and they just live beautifully.
That's right.
I can tell you ideally what is supposed to work, and then all I can recommend is that you try it or try different things and see what works for you. So dig them up, cut them off, brush the soil off, don't get them wet, don't wash them. And then when you pack them, you can either roll them up in layers of newspaper, or you can use sawdust or slightly moist peat moss, not soppy wet, but just a little, you just want a little bit of moisture in there. cardboard box or a paper bag is probably going to be best. The real trick is the temperature. Ideally, they need to be stored in a place like between 45 and 52 degrees. And if it gets warmer than that, if it gets much warmer than that, like above 55 degrees, they start to sprout. And that is really detrimental to their overall health. They won't make it through the winter if they start to sprout. If it's too cold, if it's closer to 40 degrees or 35 degrees, then they're going to freeze and they're going to rot. If it's too wet, they will rot. If it's too dry, they will completely dry out. So a lot of it, it's not so much, you know, a lot of it is how you prepare them. Mm-hmm. But the biggest part is where you store them. So in the old days when people had root cellars, that was perfect because it was moist, it was cool, it was dark, it was, you know, kind of a constant temperature. But now people have heated basements. It's dry, it's hot, it's, you know, you can't get to that ideal temperature. If you had an old refrigerator that you didn't use for anything else, you know, you could turn it to 45 degrees and you could store them in the refrigerator and that would be perfect because they would stay the same temperature, they would stay the right humidity, and they would be great. But most people don't have that. And you cannot store them in a regular refrigerator where you're storing other things, because if you store any of those bulb type plants with like apples, the ethylene will damage them and then you won't get any flowers.
Yep.
So when can I dig them up?
Now. You could do it now.
Yep.
But I still got some flowers coming.
Well, then don't do it now.
When can I dig them up? How about that? After freeze?
Well, this is also the tricky part. So you really don't want them to freeze. So you need to be monitoring your nighttime temperatures pretty carefully. And if it looks like you're going to get a hard freeze, and, you know, hard freeze is below 32. So if it's going to be like 33, 34, you might be okay. But if it gets down to 28 and they freeze hard, you may end up getting some rot in them because that freeze will go all the way down into the crown of the bulb.
Yeah, I suppose you could cover them.
You could.
If you wanted to extend it out.
Yeah. You know, where are you again? Eau Claire?
Watertown.
Oh, Watertown. Yeah, you could probably... you could probably wait a couple more weeks, but I would say watch those nighttime temperatures. You try to avoid letting them freeze completely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, this year, I hope that I can make it to the spring.
I hope so, too. I want you to report back next year with your successes.
Where? What street are you on in Watertown? Are you on 8th Street or 9th Street?
We're going to drive by next spring and check on you.
See, my mother-in-law and my father-in-law are on 10th Street. So
So this is a possibility.
I'll put up some venison brats.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks a lot calling. Oh, yeah. We get to Watertown pretty often. In fact, I might be playing a little golf with my father-in-law this weekend if everything works out the way it should down at his club.
Beautiful, beautiful weather this weekend.
Patrick in Lake Geneva, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have actually three questions. The first one is, everybody says the best fertilization for your lawn is always in the fall before winter comes. Is that the same for perennials too? Do you go ahead and fertilize perennials before in the fall to build up the root systems?
No, you know, when perennials are going through their dieback phase right now, they're automatically putting all their storage reserves down into the roots, and if you fertilize them right now, it confuses them a little bit, and they think
How about newly planted Cleveland pears that were planted this spring?
No, you know, I wouldn't. Really, grass is, the turf grass is about the only thing that gets fertilized in the fall, other than bulbs. If you're planting bulbs for spring flowers, this is a great time to fertilize them, or garlic. Anything that you're planting now that, uses this time period to actually vigorously grow roots. And so most plants right now are not vigorously growing roots. They are going into dormancy and storage mode. So fertilization is not the best thing to do for those plants right now. But garlic, tulips, daffodils, and turf grass, this is their time to actually reproduce and send out their root systems. So they are actively growing, even if you might not be able to see it. It's all this below ground growth. But your perennials, you know, not that it would hurt them, but, it's really not recommended.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And my last question is, I have two very large blue spruces, probably 30 to 40 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And last year we started noticing loss of needles up mm-hmm. the center of the tree, not out at the tips and not at the top.
In the
but
middle.
Up the center. Mm-hmm. And this year we thought maybe it was because of the drought this year. It's the same thing. It's even more so.
Mm-hmm.
It's like gutted the inside of the tree, but the outside appears to be healthy.
That's pretty much the way it works, isn't it?
Pam? Yeah. Well, some of that could be normal. I mean, needles do drop, and as the tree gets more mature, the needles towards the interior will drop off as the branches become more more mature and harder and woodier, and then those, you know, they lose their ability to actually to bud out or to make needles towards the center of the tree. There are two diseases that affect spruces, especially blue spruces, pretty prominently. But if you had either one of those, I would expect that you would see complete branch dieback, at least either on some of the lower branches or intermittently.
Complete dieback, but not at the tips.
Well, it still could be
maybe
one of those.
A foot back in. It's almost all, you can see right through the tree all the way up to the top.
Wow. Yeah. Well, like I said, some of that is normal. Some of that is could be drought related. And then some of it may be that you're starting to develop one of the needle blight diseases. The one that I would suspect is called Rhizosphera needle cast.
Uh-huh.
And we do have a really nice garden fact sheet on that on the horticulture website.
Okay.
So if you go to hort.uwex.edu, you could just type in spruce and you'll get to see all of the lovely diseases that affect spruce. But the one you're looking...
You spray on them or is it a fungus?
It's a fungal disease and, you know, you're talking about a 30, 40 foot tree. I would not recommend spraying. If it is that, eventually those branches will continue to die out all the way to the tips. And once that happens, those branches are gone.
Yep.
So
okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Patrick. And Dolores in Kenosha, thank you for calling. Hi.
Oh, good morning. I have a question about, I want to do some renewal pruning
mm-hmm.
on, I have one of the red twig, but it's not a dogwood. I believe it's like the cranberry viburnum or something.
Okay.
It's been out there for 10, 15 years.
Okay.
And the last few years I have not gotten to it, so it's got... some of the thicker stems
mm-hmm.
that, of course, don't turn color. It's pretty weedy
mm-hmm.
down in the middle. You know, it just gets too thick where it's almost impossible to get in there
mm-hmm.
with anything effective to prune out stuff. Can I cut it back pretty severely, the entire thing, and then just, you know, at that level, then go in and thin it out?
Well, there are a lot of factors in play here. I'm not sure exactly which plant you have, and that can make a difference because some things don't respond very well to that total rejuvenation or renewal pruning where you're removing so much of the plant. You know, ideally, to go in and selectively prune out the larger, older pieces and allow those newer ones to grow would be good, and then it also gives a little more aeration and cleans it up a little bit. If that's really not possible and if it's really overgrown, you know, it could be that it's not going to come back if you cut it back all the way. But so at this point, you need to weigh your options. You know, do you want to try to do this yourself? Do you want to hire somebody to come in and try to do this corrective pruning for you? Do you want to take a chance and cut it all the way back to the ground and then it doesn't come back? And, it, you know, with the viburnums, you know, most of the time they're pretty good about coming back. But the other red twig one that I'm thinking about is the Euonymus elata, which is the burning bush. That does not like to be cut all the way back to the ground. So if it happens to be that one and you cut it back, it's probably not going to come back.
Well, now I know it's not a burning bush.
Okay, okay.
The leaves will turn kind of bronzy. And in the spring, it gets the cluster flowers.
Oh, well, that does sound like a viburnum.
By, yes,
followed by white berries.
Okay, that does sound like a viburnum. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, although it sounds a little bit like a dogwood, too, though.
Yeah. I suppose I could. I've always been afraid of cutting the little ones, but it's gotten so thick, I suppose I could get in and effectively.
Right.
Cut out the old stuff and sacrifice mm-hmm. some of the new stuff because there's the base is probably 3 to 4 feet across.
Oh, wow. That sounds like it needs to have some corrective pruning done.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so my suggestion, too, is to do a little bit of research on that now. And you can go to our horticulture website. We have a great fact sheet by Dr. Laura Jahl on pruning deciduous shrubs. And so it's called Properly Pruning Deciduous Shrubs on our hort.uwex.edu website. And so you can go there and you can read about it and kind of set up your plan of attack, but don't do it until the spring.
Yeah.
I would say don't do it until February or early March.
So wait, patience.
Yeah, patience.
Patience is the key there, Dolores. Mm-hmm. And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And tell you what, there's all kinds of things we could talk about here. The horticulture website, though, is a great one, and I hope you'll take a look at that website because there's lots of great information on it. Patty Nagai, our guest today, UW Extension horticulture educator. She works out of Racine County. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about growing plants, whether indoors or out. They really need some help to connect us to stay going once the fall and the winter come. Plants really get us in tune with the seasons, I think. It's so much fun to be out this time of the year. I really enjoy it. And I really enjoy working with our plants outdoors. Patty Nagai does as well. She's a UW Extension horticulture educator. She works out of Racine County. Lots of great information to share. Glad to have her along. Thank you so much for listening in. And join us at 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question. All four of our lines are filled right now, but you could also go to my Facebook page. You could post there at the Larry Mueller Show, and that'll work as well. We had Bridget sent us a photo of a runaway cactus.
Taking up way too much space.
Taking up space, and it's kind of lopped
and kind
over.
Kind of floppy.
Floppy.
Yeah. The floppy cactus.
She wants to prune it, just whack it down.
Just prune it, yeah.
Whack it.
You know, the only caution I have about pruning cacti is to make sure that, you know, you're using a clean blade. So either a clean pruner or a clean sharp knife, make sure it's really sharp. And you can use a spray disinfectant or something along those lines to make sure that you're, you know, not giving your plant some horrible disease. And then, you know, the cool thing about cacti, and Larry was just talking about this because he has a lot of cactus experience, apparently, that you need to let it dry, and then you can just stick it down into a sandy soil mixture, and it'll root again, and then you can have multiple. You could make a little cactus forest.
Just let, yeah, Bridget, you can have a whole lot of cactus.
You could
plants.
Probably make, I don't know, 10 plants out of that one.
Go but into the cactus sales business.
Don't be afraid. You should not be afraid of your houseplants.
No.
I should write a book about that.
You should. Don't be afraid of your plants.
Don't be afraid of your plants.
Daryl in McFarland. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got about a dozen arborvita-type shrubs, anywhere from knee-high to about 12 feet. They were hit hard by the drought, and for most of them, their foliage is anywhere from about 30% to 99% brown.
Oh, that doesn't sound good.
Yeah, I did start to put water on them, but I think it might have been too late. So all still have at least some green on them, but you know, on some of them it's just like a tiny sprig of green, and that's about it. I guess at what point, maybe percentage-wise, should I look at just, you know, tearing them out, replacing them, and putting them in new?
You need to make friends with that first caller we have that had the $1.19 arborvita.
Yeah,
I heard that call.
Yeah, so. You need a bunch of those. If there's that little green left on the shrubs at this point in the year, they are probably doomed.
They're done.
You know, and I don't like to give up on a plant any more than any other gardener. You know, you have a couple of choices here. If you are shopping around and you find some really nice arborvitae that are a good price, I would say rip those babies out and replace them and just make sure that you're treating your next ones a little bit better. Evergreens are very sensitive to drought, and they're also very sensitive to going into winter dry. And so if we're not getting regular rainfalls, regular, really good, solid, drenching, at least 1 inch of rain every week, they need to be watered every week until the ground freezes. Otherwise, they won't make it through the winter. And that's my guess with the ones that have seen so much drought damage, is that even though they might have a little bit of life left in them, they're probably not going to make it through the winter. So you might want to look at replacing those. The other option is just to let them, you know, keep watering them, let them stand over the winter, and prune out the dead material in the spring and see if they come back. But with that kind of damage, you know, that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, I kind of figured that even the ones that continued to live wouldn't look very good anymore.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So you could dig them out if you're a real plant lover and you can't stand the fact that they're dying, and you could dig them out and put them somewhere where they're not so noticeable.
Yeah.
And then see if you can nurse them along and then plant the prettier ones out there.
Me, I'd be whacking them down.
Yeah, you know, I am a person who, when I moved into my house, had my husband go rent a chipper, and we pulled out all sorts of not so nice shrubby material that I didn't like, and they put them through the chipper and turned them into mulch. So, but I love plants. Really, I do.
Oh, thanks, Daryl. Gino in New Berlin, let's go to you now. Hi, Gino.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I have a new construction, and it's about a half acre of topsoil, about 5 inches thick.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife wants me to do the lawn yet this year. Is that a good possibility, or what do you think?
Where are you, in New Berlin?
Actually, I'm just right by Pewaukee Lake. Yeah, so
okay.
Close to New Berlin.
Okay. Well, it's still going to be the same recommendation. We are right...
A little late. Right
at the end of the prime seeding time. So if you can predict the next month of weather, and if your prediction is that we are not going to have a hard freeze in the next 30 days, you could seed a lawn. If you can't predict that, or if that prediction doesn't come true, we may have some issues. So you have a couple options. If the ground is prepped and ready to seed, you could go ahead and invest in your grass seed. You've got to water every single day. You've got to sprinkle it a little bit, keep it nice and moist. You've got to put down some kind of protective covering. So you either need to use those mats or cellulose or, compost or some sort of protective covering, straw, to make sure that those seeds and germinate is protected.
He said he was going to come in and do the Harley Rake Rock Hound first and pulverize everything, seed it.
Oh, so it's not ready. Okay.
Well, it's pretty much ready.
Is he going to do a regular seeding or a hydro seeding or a slit seeding?
A regular seeding. Yeah, we had 18 evergreens put in 2 weeks ago, so we were waiting until after that.
Right.
So I am doing a lot of watering.
Okay. So 2 weeks ago would have been a great time to seed.
Yeah.
He got tied up at his last job because of all the rain before, and now he can only get to us now.
Right.
What about a winter seeding?
Well, you know,
That's what we did last fall.
There are several options. You know, you could go ahead and go through with the seeding, but it's probably going to be a little bit sketchy. And I would recommend that that the seed that he uses, you know, you might even want to include some annual rye in the seeding, because the annual rye will come up really quickly. It will die off eventually, but it makes a nice cover. You've got to have something on there, or you're going to lose your soil over the winter.
Right.
So you've got to do something. So you're either going to have to seed with a very what would consider a temporary seed like annual rye, or you go ahead and put in your professional seeding and make sure that you've got a nice cover on it so that it's protected and that you're not going to lose soil over the winter. You do have the option of sodding, and you can sod any time that they can lay it. It can even be sodded in the winter. They sod all year round, and so you can sod as well, but that will be a little bit more expensive to do that, but you will get like an instant lawn, and so that can be very gratifying. Larry's suggesting a winter seeding, and you know, if you do the seeding now and it's not, you know, super successful, you could come back after the ground has frozen and put down some more seed. And that's called a winter seeding. And then when the time is right in the spring and all the conditions are met, some of that seed will germinate and will grow. And then you could probably overseed again in the spring once the soil temperatures get a little bit warmer. You know, ideally, the best time to do the seeding is between like mid-August and the end of September.
Yeah.
So you are right at the end of that window.
Yeah, and our weather's been kind of weird. Hopefully, I get
it is weird, and that's why I said, you know, I don't. If you know, if your contractor that you're working with guarantees it, then let him do it, because you don't want to go through. You don't want to go through winter with having nothing
no,
on your soil. That's the
there.
Worst.
Right. Yeah. Right. And if they do come back for a winter seeding, does that have to be raked in or aerated in or anything?
Oh, no, because the ground will be frozen.
Yeah.
It's just a drop seed, you know.
Drop seed over the top of the hay that's down there and whatever grasses come up. And
Yep.
Yeah. Actually, we did that and got a pretty good lawn out of it.
And again, it's very weather dependent.
Yep.
You know, there's not much you can do in the winter. It's not like you can water and the ground is frozen. So you drop the seed and hope for the best.
Yep.
There you go. Say your nightly prayers.
Thanks a lot for calling. Actually, I got nervous and threw a bunch on in the snow in the spring, too. And it just melted. The snow melted and went right down there. And
you know, sometimes it works really well. It just depends on the weather.
Yeah. Thanks. You know, Ann and Madison, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a plum tree. I've done a little research on it, and I think it has black knob fungus, which, and then they tell me that it's a goner, that there's
pretty
nothing
much.
You can do for it. Is that right?
And it's actually black knot, K-N-O-T, black knot.
Oh, black knot.
Black
is that what it is?
Yeah, it looks like a knob. I understand the confusion, but it's black knot if somebody else wants to look it up. And we do have a nice fact sheet on that on the horticulture website.
Oh, I'll look it up.
And with a beautiful picture.
What happens to it is it gets a lot of fruit. It gets a lot of fruit.
Sure.
And the fruit's beautiful, but then all the fruit shrivels up into these black, horrid-looking things.
I'm
completely
sorry.
Inedible.
Yeah.
So it's sad.
Yeah, I think
it's
a goner.
No, there really is nothing you can do.
It's a goner.
You know, when people get black knot on some species, so like some of the little ornamental plum trees, the Newport plum, not necessarily a fruit-bearing plum, or a cherry, an ornamental cherry tree, they can get it also. It's a very common disease, and if you have American cherry in a native area around you, a naturalized area, which is a pretty common species, they just get it so readily. It's so easily transmitted from tree to tree.
Can I replant in that area, or should I leave it?
Sure, you can.
How is it
but
transmitted?
It'll come.
The birds will transmit it, air, pruning tools, you know, if you've pruned and you have the fungus on your pruners, you can spread it yourself. There really isn't any treatment for it. If it's not too severe, one of the recommendations is to cut it out, and you need to make a cut 6 to 12 inches below the knot, and then make sure that you're disinfesting your pruning tools very nicely with a spray disinfectant or a bleach solution or something along those lines to make sure that you're not spreading it, because, you know, a cut surface is a great place to introduce fungal spores. But a lot of times people have black knot in the trunk, in the main trunk, and, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. You just have to cut it down. Now, chances are if you plant another plum or a cherry in that area, you probably will eventually get it again, because there is another source of it somewhere in your area.
I was thinking pear tree.
Oh, if I switch fruits, it'll matter?
Switch fruits, yes. It's just the prunus. It's just the prunus species that get it. So if you go to the pyrus or the malus, so pyrus would be pear and malus would be apple, then they don't get it.
Oh, that's a great solution. Okay, well, I'll let it go then. Nothing I can do. I'm sad, though.
Yes, I'm sad, too. That's a tough one.
We have friends, though, Anne, who have a pear tree that produced just the most delicious pears this year.
Ooh.
Thousands of them. And it was wonderful.
You didn't
wonderful.
Bring me any.
I could have brought some. And Judith says, what about me? Well, they're not right next door. And I got a bag full of them.
Oh.
And they're.
Oh, you know, and you're saving those for yourself.
Well, no, I've been
eating them.
We've got about eight left, I think.
Yeah, pear trees, you know, pear trees really are, I think, one of the easier fruit trees to take care of in Wisconsin. Apple trees require a lot of care. There are just way too many diseases and insects that attack apple trees.
I'm going to
Gopher pear.
Mourn my plum tree and look forward to some pears. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. And another, actually, in our neighborhood, there's another family that has pears, a pear tree, and apparently they don't like pears because the tree is, the pears are, you know.
All over the ground.
All over the ground, and I think they even had, there was a sign out at one point.
Help
take
yourself.
Take as many as you want. and they were good, and I did grab one, and they were very, you know, it was very good. So.
So that's where we can find Larry, out in the neighborhood, picking up discarded fruit. That's good.
My lime tree, though.
Oh, yeah.
That Meyer's lime. You know, you talked me into that.
Yeah, the Bear's lime.
Or Bear's lime, sorry. Yes. I got the Bear's lime, and one lime started to come.
Uh-oh, and it fell off.
And it fell off when it got about a half an inch, or about an inch long.
Were you talking to it?
I tried. I just took it inside because we're going to keep it, you know, keep it over winter, obviously.
Make sure that you continue to water and fertilize and put it in a bright location. Don't overwater it, though. Make sure it's dry when you water it. And then look for blossoms sometime around the holidays. So, like, between Thanksgiving and New Year's.
Okay.
Look for blossoms. You can play bee. Remember, I told you about playing bee and helping the pollination along, making your little buzzing noises while you're doing it. It's very important. and then you should get some fruit set in the spring as long as the watering is kept pretty even. I have found that they're really sensitive. If they get overwatered especially, they'll drop fruit.
Could have happened.
So they seem to be more sensitive to overwatering than underwatering. So always err on the dry side.
Well, they're going right to our... Actually, that tree will be in our bedroom because there's going to be some nice light.
Okay.
And we're actually going to add a grow light, I think.
Okay.
And we'll be watching the water and fertilizing a bit, though.
Yeah, you know, at least once a month, a nice nice flowering plant fertilizer.
Flowering plant fertilizer. Mm-hmm.
I have found that my citrus trees bloom prolifically starting around Thanksgiving. And they are, well, I have those two larger lemon trees. And they are so fragrant that there are times when I can't go in there. It's like, it's almost like it's a real heady citrus, jasmine-y citrus kind of fragrance.
Got me going again.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe I should just give you one of mine.
Well, you know, there's my birthday next year and there's Christmas coming.
Oh, that's true. Lots of possibilities.
There are opportunities out there, Patty.
I will try to take some cuttings off of my tree for you. How about that?
That could work. Deb in Milwaukee. Hi, Deborah. Thank you for calling.
Yes. I have some arbs. I have technies and emeralds.
Mm-hmm.
They're newly planted in June.
Mm-hmm.
And they are about 5 feet tall.
Okay.
And I just need to know if I need to do anything to protect them before the winter from, like, deer or rabbits. Or,
do you have deer?
Not really. I don't see too many, but...
Okay, because deer do love arborvitae.
It only takes one.
Yeah.
And those are two arborvitae that deer will munch on. The most important thing for newly planted shrubs, especially conifers, is to make sure that they stay well watered until the ground freezes. So, you know, give them a nice thorough soaking at least once a week. Don't overwater them. Once a week is usually enough. But make sure that the water is getting down and the entire root ball is getting saturated, because with a newly planted tree like that, you've got, you know, that root system is trying to recover. And this is a great time for roots to grow. So they will be trying to grow out into the native soil around them. The other thing that you might want to think about is providing a support system for them, because I have seen in the past where people have put in fall planted conifers and then the winter winds have actually caused them to tip over. And then once they do that, it's very difficult to straighten them up again without giving some root damage. So, you know, if they're in a place where you think that the wind might be an issue, you might want to provide a support stake just for this first year, you know, and make sure that they are able to stay rigid. Once the ground freezes, come in and put in a winter mulch around the base of the plant. Don't do it before the ground freezes, though. Winter mulches really need to be put in winter. So once the ground is frozen, you can come in and put a nice 4 to 6 inch thick mulch. It could be straw. It could be regular bark mulch or wood shavings, wood chips. You know, it could be anything.
Mm, there you go.
And make sure the root ball gets covered completely with that nice winter mulch.
Thanks, Deb. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. Dorothy in Chippewa Falls. Hi.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes. What's on your mind?
Overwintering hostas in pots.
Okay. Oh. Why? Why do you want to do that?
Because I don't have ground. I was living where I had hostas, quite a number of them, and I moved to an apartment where I only have a patio, and I brought some of my hostas with me in pots, and they did quite well during the summer.
Yes.
But I have no ground to put them in.
Oh, dear.
I do have a shed with no light. It's uninsulated. Can they survive in there? I did keep a hosta for several years in in a garage over winter in a pot.
Yeah,
and
you know.
I kept it outside under cover. But I think that last bad winter might have killed it.
Right.
Because it wasn't protected any other way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it was somewhat protected. So I had one in a pot for several years. And
it's possible. We can do this. We can work our way through this. You know, and what I would recommend because of your situation is that you keep them out on your patio as long as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that they stay watered. As soon as they die back naturally, you know, remove their foliage, take all of the pots, huddle them together in your shed, cover the whole thing with, you know, if you want to use a mulch like straw or something like that, or even some old blankets, just cover them. Make sure they're moist when you do this, and then just leave them alone until spring. And then when the weather starts warming up a little bit, you know, maybe in March, go out there and uncover them and check on them, see how they're doing. And then, you know, eventually you can pull them back out when we get past. You know, it's not that hostas are very cold tolerant as far as their root systems goes. What you want to avoid is that freezing and thawing of the pots. So however you can huddle them together to kind of, and it's, you're not trying to keep them from freezing. That's not what hurts them. What hurts them is when they freeze and thaw and freeze and thaw and freeze and thaw over the winter. That's what really kills them. Or if they dry out completely.
There you go, Dorothy. Thank you. And Nathan in Western Dane County. Hi.
Hey there. I'm curious about setting up a garlic bed for this fall. I've never grown garlic before and would be happy for some tips.
And we've had several questions about that. If you got about a minute,
Yes, I'd love to talk about garlic. We're going to plant garlic in our community garden for the first time this year. And on the West Madison Research Station website, there are some lists of garlic cultivars that are really good for Wisconsin. So that's a great place to start. Fall is the best time to plant garlic. You want to plant it about 3 to 4 inches deep. You want to make sure you water it and keep it watered until the ground freezes. This is one of those crops you can fertilize in the fall. If you've got a lot of organic matter in the soil, that's great because garlic will develop its root systems until the ground completely freezes. So it will continue to grow usually until like mid-December, but just the base. You don't want to plant it too early because you don't want top growth. So it's very much like planting tulips or daffodils. But the root system on garlic can get 3 to 5 feet deep.
Wow.
So it develops a really nice root system.
Oh, that's great.
It's easy to plant. It's easy to grow. You'll start to see those shoots come up in the spring, and then you can harvest it in the middle of next summer.
And you're wonderful. You know that, Patty? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You do such a great job. Thank you
so
much.
That makes my whole week, Larry.
She does a great job, doesn't she? Patty Nagai, UW Extension, horticulture educator for Racine County. Oh, it's such a pleasure. You'll come back and be with us again?
Absolutely. I love doing this.
I hope so. She will be back. Thank you for listening. And Peter Green coming on Monday to talk computers. Pete with Infostar.com. We'll look forward to that. And thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.